I walked down the hill about 12 o'clock. I sat right down on a great big rock. I looked down in the water and bless my soul, I seen a great big catfish jump in that hole. I'm a-going to fishing, cause everybody's fishing, and I'm a-going to fishing too. You bet your life that your loving wife might catch more fish than you. Any fish will bite if you got good bait, and here's a little something that I'd like to relate. When it's time to bite, Lord, the fish won't wait. I'm a-going to fishing, cause everybody's fishing, and I'm a-going to fishing too.
With its thousands of lakes and streams, Wisconsin is a haven for anglers who enjoy the challenge of the catch and the serenity of nature. For fishing enthusiasts, spending time on the water leads to moments you'll never experience in the same way again, and some you'll never forget. Welcome to Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. Today, we explore the fishing experience from tips for beginners to advice for pros. And we want to hear your fishing stories, too, your secrets and your suggestions when you join us at 800-780-9742 or email your questions and your comments to us at ideas@wpr.org. Captain Barb Carey grew up in the UP, where she found her passion for fishing. She loved it so much, she started a club, Wisconsin Women Fish. Barb also has a charter captain's license and helps women learn not only to fish, but to drive boats in some of the largest bodies of waters around us. Captain Carey, welcome to Route 51.
Thank you so much.
Also with us today is Teresa Stabo, who studied natural resources at the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point. She has been with the Wisconsin Department of Resources since 1987. Teresa helped create the Angler Education Program, which helps people learn to fish and how to cook what they catch, too. Teresa, welcome.
Thank you.
I'm so glad to have you both here. Barb, you started your group, Wisconsin Women Fish, after realizing you weren't seeing a whole lot of other women on the water. Has that changed over the years? Are you finding a lot more women are interested in this?
Oh, absolutely. There's been an explosion of female anglers, both on the ice and open water. The growth in the women in the industry is amazing.
I want to ask you both, and Teresa, I'll start with you. Do you remember the first fish you ever caught?
Yes, I do. I was about 6 years old, and I was sitting at Cushing Park with a cane pole in my hand, and I yanked in a bluegill. And it was just one of the most exciting days of my life.
Is the thrill the same for you now?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Every time's like the first time. Whenever I get to fish, I have to kind of restrain myself so that I don't disturb the peace, because
disturb the peace. Barb, what about you? What's the first fish you ever caught?
Well, the first one that I really remember is I was about 8 years old and I was casting at some friend's house. My parents took me to visit some friends who lived on a lake, and I caught a bass on this little crankbait, and I was just shocked and thrilled and ecstatic and went running up to the house to show my huge catch, which was probably a 10-inch bass. But it just created this, you know, your heartbeat beats faster and your blood is pumping through your veins, and it just is so exciting. And it's, I think that is the piece that becomes an addiction to anglers.
It's funny because when I hear both of you talk about this, these are really vivid memories. I mean, things you are just never going to forget. Why do you think why do you think this is so ingrained in your mind and something that is so important to your personal history? Barb, what do you say about that?
Well, you know, life is always so complicated. And for me, fishing is the only time that I'm just thinking about fishing. You know, I'm totally present in the moment. And, you know, I can't remember anything, including where I put my car keys. But boy, I can remember what I caught that 30-inch walleye on 6 years ago. You know, so I don't know how fishing is wired in your brain, but if everything was wired the same way, I'd be a lot more intelligent. I know that.
Well, you'd all be so much more organized, wouldn't we, Barb?
Yes.
Well, Teresa, take me through the seasons for fishing in Wisconsin. I mean, there's a season for each kind of fishing. And obviously, there's got to be, you know, different equipment you use. But do you fish for different species depending on the time of year?
Well, depending on the time of year, no, yes and no. I really do like to fish for panfish. yellow perch, that's my favorite fish to eat. But you can catch them pretty much year round. So in the winter, you'll be digging a hole, not digging, you'll be drilling a hole to catch some panfish on the lakes. Or walleye, you know, there's walleye fishing, you know, the hard water fishing for walleye as well. But then, as the lakes open up, then, you know, we still, again, we'll be seeing crappies coming in. And then, you know, the trout streams will open up in May. There is an early season catch and release trout season. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's really a different kind of water. And, you know, the trout streams, you know, typically are often open. You cannot, you know, from the standpoint of being able to enter them. But
what about the regulated seasons? Like, does fishing season always open the same weekend every year, spring? And I mean, does that change?
The general opener is always the first Saturday of May.
Okay.
But then there are some nuances to that. There are different seasons, like for sturgeon, that has a very, very short and discrete season. That's a September season. Mm-hmm. And then the Great Lakes, they have a slightly different seasons, mm-hmm. too. Mm-hmm. Bass, those seasons are a bit different too, particularly on the boundary waters, you know, with Michigan and Wisconsin. Those seasons will be different. They won't open right away.
Okay.
The first weekend in May, like everything else. That might be mid-June before you can go after largemouth or smallmouth bass. And some of our
so where do you go waters. To find out the current regulations? Is it always on the DNR website?
Yes, you can look on our website, and if you go buy your fishing license at your local bait shop, they should have a stack of the old hard copies, which some of us have a preference for. Some of us prefer to scroll on a screen, and others prefer to flip pages.
Sure.
I'm a page flipper, but I can do both.
All right. Barb, I want to ask you to take me through the whole experience before you even set foot near the water. What kind of equipment do you need to start? What do you absolutely have to have before you head out?
Well, you know, the good thing about fishing equipment is it's really improved over the past, you know, even 10 years. So there's a lot more science put into it. Obviously, if you're going to go fishing, you need a good rod and reel combo. And I think that pairing your choice with the species that you're going to fish for is really important. Oftentimes I describe fishing rods as, you know, they go from something as sensitive as a willow branch to something as stiff and hard as a 2x4. So you don't want to have a 2x4, you know, if you're fishing for really light biting fish. So you want to be able to pair that with the most likely species that you're going to be fishing for. So oftentimes I see mistakes people make is they buy something medium or medium heavy and they're fishing for panfish, but they can't feel the bite because the rod is kind of stiffer. So, you know, if you're only going to get one rod, you know, I would get a light rod. So the way they rate them is like ultralight, light, medium, medium heavy, and heavy in that nature. That's kind of the basic way. And all the information of what the rod is written on the side of it. A lot of people tend to pick rods by the color or how they look or if they're attractive, and you should totally disregard that, you know, and look at the side of the rod and see exactly what it is.
What about the length? I mean, you know, how do you choose the right length rod for you?
Well, you know, there's one example is if you have a longer rod, you can get by with a lighter rod because the rod itself will take up some of the fight of the fish. So I always recommend longer rods if people are shore fishing. A longer two-piece rod, you know, if you happen to catch a really big fish, you still have a lot of rod to absorb, a lot of the shock of that bite. The line you can cast farther with a longer rod. And my preference for a shore fishing rod is one that's even up to 8 feet long. So we fish for, you know, crappies, perch, and walleye. All catch them all with the same rod. So
it sounds like communicating with who you're buying it from is important. I mean, not just going in and if you're a newbie and just picking it out.
Absolutely. And there's so much information these days online. I mean, you can watch a YouTube video on everything, like how to pick the best fishing rod for a new person. And oftentimes, if you buy a fishing rod and reel combination together, there's already line on it. But oftentimes, that line is heavier than you probably will want. Line is something that people often, you know, don't realize the importance of. You know, you want to get by with the lightest line you can because it's going to help you cast farther. The fish aren't going to see it. And you just tend to catch more fish.
Okay. Let's talk about bait. Teresa, how do you go about choosing what kind of bait to use? Does it depend on what you're fishing for? And I'm curious about live bait versus, you know, the kind you buy in the store.
Well, right. Similar to how Barb described gear, you're going to want to have those same kind of considerations with your bait selections. So, you know, for panfish, a bobber and a worm, that's a pretty safe bet. Or minnows. But if you're going after something, you know, a little bit bigger, you know, some of the larger game fish like smallmouth bass, largemouth bass, then you can get into some larger lures, you know, spinners and poppers and things like that. So for a northern pike, maybe some wobbling spoons, something that's going to show some action. You know, the northerns, they're pretty aggressive fish. If they see something wobbling by, they're going to want to go investigate, see what that is, see if it's something they want to eat or just mm-hmm. find out more about it. I've had this experience of pulling in a bass that I was about to let go, let off the hook, and this northern came just roaring out of the water and about to chop this bass that was on the end of my hook. It really gave me a start. So I thought, wow, I can catch two fish with one cast.
But there you go.
Illegal. But anyways, that northern went away. But so they, you know, the point is that they like action. They like to see what's going on.
Does the color of the lure matter? I read that it does, but it seems like, I guess I don't know why that would be.
Well, you know, chartreuse is a favorite color for certain fish in certain times. Purple. Sometimes, you know, we have to really step back and say, all right, are these lures painted to attract me or to attract the fish?
Exactly.
They are very attractive. But so, for example, if you're going after a smallmouth bass, I just heard this the other day from a colleague that he was having good luck with chatterbaits, you know, in purple or chartreuse, and they just have some sort of a trailer to match. When you're pulling them in, they're gonna provide some action.
Mm-hmm. Barb, I want to ask you about this. I have a friend who uses corn kernels and hot dog slices as bait. Have you ever seen anybody use those kinds of weird, unusual types of bait?
Oh, absolutely. I know even ice fishing, a lot of times people swear by using hot dogs for big pike. It's old folklore, and I think it still works. I've seen it done. I particularly don't use it, but, you know, when desperate times come from desperate measures, I guess. Also, you know, there's also so many plastic baits. A lot of people don't really like touching worms and minnows or anything like that, but there are so many new scented plastics that you can use now, even for little panfish or bigger fish or whatever, but they're scented, they're a variety of colors, they're a variety of shapes. You know, generally, the key to fishing, the number one rule of fishing, is to know where your bait is in the water column. You know, mm-hmm. the fish are either on the surface, in the middle, or towards the bottom. And you want to choose your bait to match where the fish are in the water column.
Okay. Teresa Stabo and Captain Barb Carey are our guests today on Route 51 as we continue our discussion on fishing. Had advice on finding the perfect fishing hole, and we'll answer your questions too when you call us at 800-780-9742. You can also send an email to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Pink rod and reel. She's doing almost everything but sitting still. Talking about her ballet shoes and training wheels and her kittens. And she thinks we're just fishing.
Listener support is the largest source of funding for WPR programs. That's important, especially right now during our spring member drive. Make your impact on WPR programs with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Thank you. You're listening to Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Shereen Seward. We continue now with our discussion on fishing with Captain Barb Carey and Teresa Stabo. And we want to hear your fishing secrets and stories, too. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or call 800-780-9742. I'm curious about fishing etiquette, especially for beginners. Like somebody like me, I wouldn't even know what to do. So what are some of the rules of the road, so to speak, that I would need to know before heading out? Teresa, let's start with you.
Fishing etiquette, that's really, that's a good point. We don't want to crowd each other. You know, there's a lot of water out there, enough for everyone. So we want to give each other enough space. Be aware of where your line is aiming. Make sure that when you're casting that nobody's near you. And just, you know, be mindful of any items that you bring with. You know, use a pack out, pack in mentality. And that's true for bait too. When we were talking about bait before, I was thinking about the invasive species issues that we have when people have released their bait into the water or even their worms into the woods. Where worms, you know, when I was growing up, I thought worms had always been here, but that's not so. And when they're released into the woods, that can change the forest composition just because they munch down the leaf layer, you know, the leaf litter, and that will change the composition of our forests. So those are some things to think about. And, you know, as far as, you know, etiquette, you know, like I was saying before, when I get excited about catching fish, I try to keep it down so that I don't disturb other anglers. But it is exciting to fish, and we want to share that excitement, but also be respectful that people often go out to fish for peace and quiet.
Well, sure. I'm curious, too, Barb, how far should boaters stay away from people they see fishing on a lake? We wonder this all the time when we're, you know, out on a pontoon boat and we're not fishing and we see people fishing. How far away is there a general rule?
Well, you know, that's a good point. Oftentimes it depends on the water. If you're fishing on a lake and there's a specific piece of structure on that lake that people are fishing, boats tend to get a little bit closer together. You know, obviously, you know, you try to stay as far away from possible, you know, and if somebody's in a spot that I want to fish, I'll just choose a different spot and not go fish right next to them. I've been in a boat before, and the other boat came up so close, I just asked the guy, hey, do you want some of my peanuts? Because I could have handed them over to him. Mm-hmm. And that's obviously way too close, you know. It's a little bit variable. You know, if there's one common piece of structure, boats tend to crowd a little bit more. The other thing that I often see boats doing, which I find disrespectful, is fishing in the area where the shore anglers are fishing. You know, their shore angler spots are very limited. So if you're in a boat, don't crowd in on those same areas that the shore anglers are trying to fish. You know, choose a different spot. You know, they're limited, and you with a boat can go anywhere. That's one of my pet peeves that I see happen.
Good advice. Good advice. Teresa, do some sections of water have different rules about, say, catch and release or limits on live bait, or is it the same everywhere?
There are differences, and it depends on the season. For trout fishing, there'll be some periods where it's artificial baits only, mm-hmm. and no live bait at all. And so there's a difference there. And I'm sorry, what was the rest of that question? Where was I going with that?
I was just wondering, where, if there are release or limits on live bait or, and where would we find that?
Again, that would be in the regulations. Okay. So in the regs, it's arranged by county. So there's something a little bit different about every county. So, for example, in Green Lake County, and this used to be true. I'm not seeing it now anymore, but there was something about the bait that you couldn't use live. So maybe I won't talk about that one.
Okay,
that
sounds
changed
good.
Before.
But basically, do a little research before you go so you know. Okay,
right,
so there
right.
are differences.
Yes,
well,
particularly with trout fishing, that's where a big difference is in terms of whether you can use live bait or artificial only, and whether it's a catch and release season only as well.
Barb, what's the best way to find unknown or secret fishing spots? It feels like the anglers I know sure don't want to tell when they found one.
Well, one thing I like to do is have a Wisconsin gazetteer. You know, that way shows all the waterways. It shows where the little rivers cross the roads. It shows all the boat landings. And oftentimes, if I keep that in the car, even if I'm going for a drive, and I cross a stream or I cross a small body of water, I can take that out and look and see if it's public property or private property and just go exploring with one of those in the car. I've come across lots of really cool fishing areas that I found that I didn't even know were there just because I have this specific map in the car and I can stop and take a look.
Mm-hmm. Is there some unwritten code that anglers live by when they've been gifted information about a secret spot? Are you not supposed to tell? Are you not supposed to share it?
Well, absolutely. You know, especially if someone gives you that information in confidence. For example, if someone takes you out in their boat and takes you to this spot, you catch a whole bunch of fish. Well, you don't want to go blab that to everybody. I mean, that was almost like a gift that person gave you, mm-hmm. and you don't want to give it away. So, and you don't want that person to go to your spot the next day and that person sitting in it with a bunch of their friends.
Sure.
I mean, that's just common courtesy.
Teresa, what tips do you have for hiring a fishing guide? What should we look for if that's the way we want to go?
Well, I really can't speak to hiring a fishing guide. That would be more Barb's area.
All right. But well,
I do want to follow up on what Barb was saying about where to find a spot. You know,
great.
We do have places online where you can look for these public access sites, these little known public access sites, these little tucked in places. There are places here in Madison where I live where I really wasn't even aware of it. They're just these little teeny little trails down to the water. That's public. Those are public easements. So really be aware of the easements that we have around various lakes. And those are open to everybody. So again, the gazetteer is a good place to look. But also just look at our public access sites that we have that online too. And I'll get to the exact website for that too.
Okay, great. Well, Barb, let's return to that question about a fishing guide. What should we look for in hiring a fishing guide?
Well, I think that, one goal you should be to, when you hire a guide, is to, what do you want? Do you want to learn how to fish a specific species or a specific body of water? Some guides are, just into letting you catch as many fish as you can to bring home. Others, are more willing to teach you about the certain techniques, maybe educate you on your home lake. I think one mistake people make is, like, if they're traveling or they're going on vacation, they're more apt to hire a fishing guide. But consider hiring one for your local body of water. It's going to cut years of time off of your, searching for the answers on your home lake if you can go out with a guide, but really communicate with them about what you want. If it's whether you want to learn how to find, a specific species in this lake or fish it as the seasons change or whatever, but knowing what you want and having a conversation with the guide ahead of time, I think, is really important.
Teresa, how do you learn how to read the water? Is that hard, you know, knowing what to look for and looking out and understanding for yourself what kind of spots are going to be best?
Yeah, I think that takes some experience, knowing that certain fish, they're going to be hanging out along the rocks. They're going to be nestled in maybe underneath an overhanging branch. So just really, really understanding where a fish might be hanging out. And it depends on the season, too, different times of the day. You know, in the morning, the fish might be closer to the surface. At night, during the day, as the sun gets higher, the fish are going to go deeper. So those are the kinds of things that you'll need to consider, too. But, you know, that comes with experience, too, just learning from experience and seeing what others are doing. If somebody else is catching something in a certain type of area, then that would be a kind of spot to consider.
I'm interested in what you said about the time of day. And, Barb, I want to get your take on this. Do you feel like fishing is best in the early morning or at dusk? I mean, is there, like, your sweet spot of time that you want to go out there and fish?
You know, that tends to vary. And, you know, people say, well, when's the best time to go? And my advice is always go when you can go, and go as often as you can. You know, if you can't go till evening, don't think that you missed out on the morning bite. You know, even sometimes midday. Right now, you know, we have the Wisconsin River that runs through the state, and it is fabulous fishing. And, you know, some days when I fish there, it's an early morning. Sometimes it's midday. You never know. So, you know, I always like to get as early as I can just to be able to get a spot, you know, have the prime pick of the spots. But generally, it varies. And just go when you can go.
And what about weather patterns, Barb? Does it matter? Does it matter if it's cold or hot? Or, I mean, what makes the perfect atmosphere?
A lot of times, right before a storm, it kind of creates a feeding frenzy with these fish. You know, high sun, no wind, really hot. I mean, everything gets kind of sluggish then. They're going deeper, they're not moving around or feeding very much. So, you know, oftentimes bad weather where it's really windy, you know, that creates a lot of stir up in the water with the waves pushing bait fish up against the shoreline, and they even call it a walleye chop. So, you know, sometimes not the best weather for being outside is actually some of the best weather for fishing.
That's interesting. So, Teresa, what do you think are the best or easiest, I guess, fish to land? For a beginner, what would be the easiest one to catch?
I would say it's easy to pull in a bluegill or a perch. Just, you know, the panfish are easy to catch. They're usually eager. They're hungry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You do a lot of educational programs, Teresa. What do you think the perfect age is for kids to start fishing and, you know, trying to get some of these easier to catch fish?
Well, I raised two children, and we had them in life jackets in the boat or along shore when they were two and stuck a fishing pole in their hand right away. So, but that, you know, for, you know, family, I don't know that it's...
No magic age.
I don't think there's a magic age. If you're working with a group of kids, you want to be able to manage them as a group. So... When we're doing, we have some fishing in the neighborhood programs, and we're sending out our fishing in the neighborhood interns, or our finterns, as we like to call them. Mm-hmm. We're sending them out with elementary school groups. And then we've done a lot of teacher training. That's kind of where this program began, was training school teachers. So fourth grade is kind of a nice age, a nice grade level, too, if you were going to incorporate an angler ed program as part of your classroom curricula, mm-hmm. So, which I think Barb did. I mean, I have photographs of Barb in one of the early angler ed instructor training workshops that we did long ago. So,
yeah, you two go way back. That's great.
Yeah. So it, you know, it's been fun just to see this program evolve over the years. You know, I often say that, the InGrid program, it grew up with my family. It really did. When, you know, my first child was born in 88 and I started the job in 87, so it really did. And now my grandchildren are here visiting and they're going to go out fishing. They're just little kids, but it's a family operation. It's just a family pastime that we've always done. And it's really nice to see school teachers are still engaging their students in fishing, mm-hmm. you know, with hunting. A lot of times for hunting, you need to come from a hunting family to learn how to hunt. But with fishing, these fishing programs, it really is a big tent program. You know, when a school teacher introduces fishing into her phy-ed class or biology class or fourth grade class, everybody's kid is there, whether they come from a fishing family or not. So they're all getting this exposure, which is something that we're really happy to continue to see. And now we have adult ed programs, you know, and Barb has, you know, for many years ago, she launched this amazing women's fishing club, which is just, I think, just the coolest thing. It's just really neat that we're getting everybody out there. And from my perspective, too, we really want to make sure that everybody feels welcome at the water's edge. I feel very passionately about this, that all of the water belongs to all of us. And just making sure that everybody feels welcome, no matter what neighborhood you grew up in or what town you grew up in, you have the right to be there. And we want you to really feel comfortable and really have confidence in your skills, too, that you know how to bait a hook, you know how to reel it in, and what to do with the fish once you catch something.
You are listening to Captain Barb Carey and Teresa Stabo, our guests today on Route 51, a discussion on fishing, sharing some great advice to get out on the water. Ahead, how to know what to keep and what to throw back, and how to cook the catch you bring home. Join in with your stories and your personal fishing advice, too. Call us at 800-780-9742. You can also send an email to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Woke up this morning, wanted to cry. Then I remembered, yes, I knew why. He's a real good one for having his cake. I'm gonna go fishing or jump in the lake. Yes, I'm gonna go fishing, that's what I'll do. Think about nothing, not even you. Catch a real big one, a big speckled trout. Snapping in the water, I'll pull him on out.
Listener support makes everything you enjoy on WPR possible. We know you value Route 51 and all WPR programs, so make your contribution right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Your gift is so important. Thank you. You're listening to Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward with our guests, Teresa Stabo and Captain Barb Carey. What would you like to know about fishing? Do you have questions about technique? Email us at ideas@wpr.org or join us by phone at 800-780-9742. A lot of people just catch and release as a rule, but if we're fishing for food, Teresa, what's your advice on what to keep and what to return to the water?
Typically, we eat panfish and perch, but it is really fun to get into a nice chunky bass and kill that. I like to dispatch my catch swiftly. I don't like the fish to suffer any longer than it has to. I think back in the day when I was growing up, we didn't really think too much about fish having feelings, you know, physical feelings. So they just kind of sat in the bucket and slowly suffocated. And so what I like to do is just really whack it on the head just really fast. It sounds brutal, but, you know, it just ends its suffering more quickly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or you can take something like a screwdriver and jab it in its head to pith it.
Yikes!
Yeah, I know. It's scary.
Yes. Yeah. But I mean, that's what it is.
Done. I mean, then it's dead and you're going to eat it. Mm-hmm. So and it'll taste better too. I mean, the quicker you kill your catch and you put it on ice, the better it's going to taste. So you really want to honor that fish that you just took from the water and really make sure that it's going to be absolutely delicious when it lands on your dining table.
Barb, is there kind of a size rule that you go by? Like what is too small to keep?
Well, with panfish, you know, we always look at sustainability for the fish. So these really big mature ones that are the top breeders, the females and the males, because the females will lay their eggs and then the males protect the nest from predators. So it's not just the females that are helpful in the process. So the ones that are, you know, big enough to clean, but not the biggest ones that are the breeders, kind of middle of the road, like eight and a half inch bluegills, those are the ones that you want to be eating. Mm-hmm. You know, as far as game fish, like walleye, generally speaking, they have to be at least 15 inches to keep. And so, you know, eating the ones that are between 15 and 19 or 20 are the ones that I like to harvest to eat. When you start getting into the bigger ones, like 25 inches or 28 inches, those, again, are the top breeders, and they're also older fish. So they don't taste as good. There's more of a risk for contaminants in the meat. So the medium size or younger fish are the ones that are, I think, better tasting and better to harvest. Now, one thing I'll add about what Teresa said about dispatching the fish, one thing to do when you catch a fish, you know, put it on a stringer, keep it in the water, and if you take a pair of scissors and just snip one side of the gills, that fish will bleed out, we call them. And then when you go to clean the fish, there's hardly any blood in the fillets, and they're bright white fillets, much easier to clean and tastier. You don't have to keep rinsing all that blood out. And it dispatches the fish in a very minimally invasive way.
You know, Teresa, I want to ask you about something that Barb just said. We've been seeing a lot more of these consumption advisories, either related to fish diseases or chemicals in the water. How do we know that the fish that we're eating is safe, or how much of it is safe to eat?
Yeah, that is a really good point. You know, PFAS is the latest forever chemical for us to become more aware of. And it is a sad fact that our waters aren't what we'd like them to be or what they ought to be. So we do have fish consumption advisories. They're based on some epidemiological research on populations of people that eat a lot of fish, and just to see what the correlation is between a diet that's rich in fish and how much of these chemicals start to build up in our own bodies. And it's true, they do. So we have the fish consumption advisories online, and we also have some paper copies where typically we'll suggest that women and children and women of childbearing age and children should really limit their consumption of large game fish just for that reason, for the PCBs and the mercury. And now with the PFAS, unfortunately, that extends to panfish, too, which was kind of opposite of what we were hearing before with mercury and PCBs. But PFAS are also prevalent in some panfish. So we want to really be aware of our levels of consumption. And there are, you know, the health advisories that are online. You can access that, and you can look by body of water. And of course, we have over 15,000 lakes in the state. We're not going to be able to sample every water body, but we can give general guidelines. And we know, you know, we have some hot spots identified that we ask people to, you know, be mindful of their consumption.
Sure. Donna from Northern Wisconsin called. She couldn't stay with us, but she wants to draw attention to some concerns about loon preservation. Barb, she wants to talk about how they're attracted to baits, get entangled in line that's left behind, and the dangers of lead sinkers. What do you say about those concerns?
Well, that's a very valid concern. I think lead is a huge issue. You know, previously there was never really a lot of alternatives, but now there's alternatives to lead. One of them is tungsten. It's actually heavier and not toxic like lead is. So there are choices, and it's about educating people of what the choices are. You know, one of the things that that we do as anglers is whenever we're fishing anywhere, you know, we always bring some empty bags and pick up all that, you know, any litter, any fishing line, any stuff that sometimes you'll pull in a tree branch, it'll be all wrapped up with fishing line or something. You know, just, you know, doing some extra effort to clean up the area. You know what's in the baits that you're using. There's one particular stretch of the Wisconsin River they actually called Lead Alley because there's so much snags there and people lose so many jigs, that area is just peppered with lead. Mm. So, you know, being mindful of that, knowing what alternatives are out there, like I say, tungsten is a good alternative to that. And, It is a concern, and it's one that people, you know, don't really realize.
Teresa.
Yeah, I'd like to follow up on that, too.
Please do,
We have a tackle loaner site. We have nearly 60 spots around Wisconsin. About half of them are in our state parks. And for about the last 25 years, that's what we've been doing. We switched out our lead 25 years ago at our tackle loaner spots with tungsten and bismuth. And they are a little bit more expensive. There's no shying away from that. But for a little bit more money, and sometimes it's a lot more money, it's significantly more money than lead. So I think we need to be honest about that. It's not just for a couple of pennies more. It's quite a bit more for tungsten. But I think it's really worth it because we do want to be mindful of the impact that we're having when we're out there fishing. And last month or a couple months ago, I discovered another type of lure or sinker that's made of glass. There's these lead-free, I think they're beautiful, and I'm going to have to order a whole bunch of them because they just look really cool. But they're some kind of a hard glass, and I'll have to experiment with them, but it just looks like it's worth looking at.
Okay. Well, thanks for that. I guess I wonder, too, about professional fishing tournaments. They've been gaining popularity throughout the state. Fishermen and the public, are tournaments like this harmful to the general fish population? What are your thoughts, Teresa?
Well, there are some perceptions about tournaments that they could be crowding out local anglers. So I think they need to, you know, we need to continue to monitor them just to see what kind of impact they're having on the local fishing population. Barbie, maybe you can speak to tournaments.
Yeah, Barb, what are your thoughts on tournaments?
Well, you know, the whole culture is changing rapidly. And before all the tournaments, they would put all the fish in the live wells, bring them all in, you know, go through this big weigh-in process and then release them. And many of the times there would be just a ton of floating dead fish around, which really angered a lot of the local people, and I can't blame them. But the trend is to go to an online catch, record, and release tournament system. There's an app called Fish Donkey that's made specifically for that. So anglers can record their fish in their boat when they catch it, log it into this app. It's time stamped, there's photos, there's different, you know, regulations that they have to follow. And that is a qualified tournament catch. And then they take photos at the end for the weigh-in, you know, they just show photos of all these fish. It's much easier on the fishing population. It's easier for the anglers, you know, they don't have to worry about keeping these fish alive. And the mortality rate is pretty non-existent because all the fish are immediately released. And that's really kind of the wave of the future.
Okay. I'm curious how state officials know how many fish are actually in a lake and when stocking might have to come into play. Teresa?
Yeah. Our fisheries biologists and researchers do surveys. And again, they can't survey every lake, but they go through a rotation on certain lakes that are popular with anglers. And they will just net some fish, catch and mark and then release and do recaptures, see how many of those fish are still there, have come back. since the last time that lake was surveyed. And we also have creel clerks. This is a summer job. It's a great summer job, by the way, if anybody's still looking for a summer job. They are looking, there'll be a creel clerk at the boat landing, and they will ask, so what did you catch today? How long have you been fishing today? What else did you catch? You know, what was, so that kind of gives us some idea of the fishing pressure on a given lake. And some lakes have more fishing pressure. So that helps us to determine regulations too. What's the fishing pressure? What are angler expectations? And where can we meet those expectations with some sensible regulations that aren't going to overtax the fish population?
I do want to touch on fishing licenses. Is there a minimum age? And are there opportunities to fish without a license throughout the year? Teresa?
Yes. The minimum age is 16. So 15 and under, you can just go fishing.
Okay.
Or you can take your family fishing. But adults, you'll have to have a license. And it is still the cheapest deal ever. We have not increased the cost of the license for 18 years. We know that the cost of everything else has gone up in the last 18 years, so it is getting more expensive. We have fewer resources to do the same amount of work, but that means that we'll be able to do less work with less money. So but when can you fish without a license? Twice a year. We have two opportunities. Once in June, the first full weekend in June, and then the third full weekend in January. So if you've never tried ice fishing or you want to take a friend ice fishing who's never done it, there's an opportunity to take your friends out on those free fishing weekends.
Okay. Fishing is such a wonderful solo endeavor. I mean, you talk about the peace that you feel out there, but it's also something that connects people who share the same passion for it. I guess, Barb, to you personally, how important are those connections with friends or even between generations?
Oh, I think it's very important. And one difference, like, you know, with fishing, you can do it your whole life. Kids oftentimes in school, you know, if they're not athletic and they're not, you know, able to be on the football team or this, you know, these high school fishing programs that are starting out now, the kids can compete and not have to be physically superior. So, and then they continue to do that their entire life. Now, as far as fishing buddies, I just did a post on our Wisconsin Women Fish page yesterday. I was fishing on the Wisconsin River, and I saw these two older gentlemen walking away from where they were fishing, and they had a stringer full of fish, and they just looked like a couple happy buddies. And then there was another pair of individuals that was there that were fishing together, and I was fishing with my fishing buddies. I think that if somebody can get some friends, a peer group of people that fish together, you learn so much because you can learn from each other. You have somebody to go with. You can go explore new places, and it just really enriches your fishing experience. And that's what, as a club, you know, women, like women in the workplace or in school, they have less of a peer group to pick from to find people to go fishing with. So through this club, they're able to find other people, and oftentimes they come in and say, oh, I found my people, you know.
Sure.
And you can develop these buddies to go on these different adventures with. And Wisconsin is full of opportunities.
This is Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward, extending a sincere thanks to our guests, Captain Barb Carey and Teresa Stabo. It's been a wonderful conversation. Our producers are Joy Ratch-Kramer and Kate Spranger. Our executive producer is Rick Ryer. Joy is our on-air producer today. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. We have special music today from Doc and Merle Watson, Trace Adkins, Peggy Lee, and Luke Bryan. Listener support is the largest source of funding for the WPR programs you rely on. Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Thank you so much and have a great week.
Saved all my birthday money up, put it down on a rod and reel. I got my green and tan plane.
fish behind the old sawmill. Mama said, watch your snakes. Daddy said, shut the gate. Brother said, to biting on a Zoom, black and red flake. Laying in the bed that night, I swear I could barely sleep. 'Cause all I ever wanted to be was big.